Hello and welcome to Exploring the Tragedy of Antony by Robert Garnier and done into English by the Countess of Pembroke, Mary Sidney. We're currently producing a full cast audio production of this play. As chosen by our wonderful patrons, you too can choose future work by joining us on patreon.com/beyondshakespeare, and here's how the process works. First, we do some exploring work on the play in question. Then we record it, and then we do a rough full-text edit, put together as spoilers. And then, and only then, sometimes after some retakes, we do a final super deluxe version. As we jump from exploration to spoilers, where we share the rough cut and some of my thoughts about the play, you can give us feedback and thoughts. I am frequently wrong about things, and where reasonable, we will sometimes change things based on your ideas. So this exploration is based on a series of one-to-one conversations with readers and occasionally performers as we tried to get to grips with this play. It's not like the exploring sessions where we're sitting around with a group round a table. This is much more in studio. And it's fair to say that we get things wrong in this first read, or these various first reads, and we dive down roads which we will not take. But also we find things that are really interesting. In the case of this play, The Tragedy of Antony, we've reframed the action of Act 1 based on the readings that we've done. So the text of the play states Act 1 ends after the first chorus. There's a speech by Mark Antony, a chorus, and then we move on. As you will hear, we don't think that works. I'm not saying it doesn't or it can't, but it didn't work for us. The action that opens Act 2, Philostratus and the second chorus, are included in this episode because it feels as part of a flow of action to me, continuing too closely to Act 1 to separate it here. That said, you could simply cut Philostratus and the second chorus, if you so wished, or do it differently. That said, act divisions are a bit of a red herring anyway, but the way it's written out on a page does shift how we look at the text, and I feel dramatically this is quite important. You will hear how this idea shifts and comes into focus in the recordings that follow. And these recordings are arranged in text order, not in the order of the recordings. So the realisation of an idea may come after it's been discussed as a thing. It's all timey-wimey. This isn't also a full exposition of the text. If you want a more considered look at how the play works, come back in a few months for the spoilers episodes when hopefully I will have got all my ducks in a row and I'll have a much clearer idea of the dramaturgy. So, first up, is the argument for the play. And now, this isn't a formal prologue in a dramatic sense, it's a literary thing, but it is quite good. So, as I say, I might chop a few bits out of this and make that the opening to the full cast to give the audience a bit of backstory before we begin, or I might write something new, I don't know yet. But the argument stands up quite well, and it's read here by Alan Scott before we segue into the opening speech of Mark Antony with Hayden McCabe. I myself am Robert Crichton still.
Right. Have you actually had read or read through the argument, because I think actually it's quite a good synopsis.
Oh yes, it is.
I just wonder whether that's worth reading into the record.
I think yeah, let's start with that, and we can see what we get.
The Tragedy of Antony, done into English by the Countess of Pembroke, imprinted at London for William Ponsonby. The argument. After the overthrow of Brutus and Cassius, the liberty of Rome being now utterly oppressed, and the empire settled in the hands of Octavius Caesar and Marcus Antonius, who, fencing straight a bond of amity between them, had taken to wife Octavia, the sister of Caesar, Antonius undertook a journey against the Parthians, with intent to regain on them the honour won from the Romans at the discomfiture and slaughter of Crassus. But coming in his journey into Syria, the places renewed in his remembrance the long intermitted love of Cleopatra, Queen of Egypt, who before time had both in Sicilia and in Alexandria entertained him with all the exquisite delights and sumptuous pleasures which a great prince and voluptuous lover could to the utmost desire. Whereupon, omitting his enterprise, he made his return to Alexandria, again falling to his former loves, without any regard of his virtuous wife Octavia, by whom, nevertheless, he had excellent children. This occasion Octavius took of taking arms against him, and preparing a mighty fleet, encountered him at Actium, who had also assembled to that place a great number of galleys of his own besides, which Cleopatra brought with her from Egypt. But at the very beginning of the battle, Cleopatra with all her galleys betook her to flight, which Antony seeing could not but follow, by his departure leaving to Octavius the greatest victory which in any sea battle hath been heard of, which he not negligent to pursue, follows them next spring, and besieges them within Alexandria, while Antony, finding all that he trusted to fail him, beginneth to grow jealous and to suspect Cleopatra. She thereupon enclosed herself with two of her women in a monument she had before caused to be built. Thence sends him word that she was dead, which, he believing for truth, gave himself with his sword a deadly wound, but died not until a messenger came from Cleopatra to have him brought to her to the tomb, which she not daring to open, lest she should be made prisoner to the Romans and carried in Caesar's triumph, cast down a cord from a high window, by the which, her women helping her, she trussed up Antonius half dead, and so got him into the monument. The stage supposed Alexandria, the chorus first Egyptians and after Roman soldiers, the history to be read at large in Plutarch in the life of Antonius.
So the great thing about the argument is it does give you a lot of backstory, which is really helpful, because the action of the play doesn't really start till they're besieged in Alexandria.
So effectively down to
almost the last paragraph, really, isn't it? Is almost halfway, maybe a little beyond.
It's beyond which she not negligent to pursue, is it?
Follows them.
I mean, effectively, the bit before is in my best Frankie Howard voice, the prologue.
Yes, what happened before? I do like, you know, without any regard to his virtuous wife Octavia, by whom nevertheless he had excellent children.
Well, quite, yes.
which he did, I mean. Antony, sir. There are two scenes with Mark Antony. Mark Antony being generally a bit sad because Mark Antony is going to die horribly.
Lovely.
It opens the play as just this massive speech. I think, off the top of my head, I could be wrong here, that this is the just after the Battle of Actium.
Okay.
And that you are basically just going, fuck! That's your motivation there for this mahoosive speech. But let's just...
Well, right.
See if the script has any errors and just see where it goes.
Since cruel heavens against me obstinate, since all mishaps of the round engine do conspire my harm, since men, since powers divide, air, earth, and sea are all injurious, and that my queen herself, in whom I lived, the idol of my heart doth me pursue. It's meet I die.
So it's taken you about six lines to get to the meat. So since everything's gone to shit, it's reasonable that I'm going to die now.
It's meat.
Okay. No. Do crack on.
It's meet I die. For her have I forgone my country, Caesar unto war provoked. For just revenge of sister's wrong, my wife, who moved my queen, to jealousy. Is that old fuck?
R-I-H in mind. That doesn't mean that either is better. It's just an exclamation, really. Yeah. It's just revenge of sister's wrong, my wife. So Caesar, obviously, because you've married Caesar's sister.
Yeah.
But you've run off with Cleopatra, so it is your fault, to be fair, that he doesn't like you very much.
For just revenge of sister's wrong, my wife, who moved my queen, oh, I me to jealousy for love of her. In her allurements, caught, abandoned life, I honour have despised, disdained my friend, and of the stately Rome despoiled the empire of her best attire. Condemn that power that made me so much feared, a slave become unto her feeble face. O cruel traitress, woman most unkind, thou dost forsworn my love and life betray, and gifts me up to rageful enemy, which soon, fool, will plague thy perjury. Yielded Pelusium on this country shore, yielded thou hast my ships and men of war, that naught remains, so destitute am I, but these same arms which on my back I wear. Thou shouldst have had them too, and me unarmed, yielded to Caesar naked of defence. Which while I bear, let Caesar never think triumph of me shall his proud chariot grace. Nor think with me his glory to adorn, or me alive to use his victory.
So you're basically, Actium's happened, you're going, yeah. It would have been better if you just caught me then.
And done me in.
And done me in, yeah. Rather than this, you're going to be captured, you're going to be put in triumph, a Roman triumph, through the streets, dragged. I mean, the idea that you're going to survive to a triumph, frankly, I think it'd just kill you straight away, but you know.
Yeah. Thou only, Cleopatra, triumph hast. Thou only hast my freedom servile made. Thou only hast me vanquished, not by force, for forced I cannot be, but by sweet baits of thy eyes graces, which did gain so fast upon my liberty that naught remained. None else henceforth, but thou, my dearest queen, shall glory in commanding Antony. Have Caesar fortune and the gods his friends? To him have Jove and fatal sisters given the sceptre of the earth. He never shall subject my life to his obedience.
There's a couple of interesting little things in there. For forced I cannot be. I like that. It's like even though everything's gone to shit, you have lost, you are doomed. There's still that little bit of pride yeah. saying, you can't or force hubris. Me to do something. Yeah. You can't force me to do it. You can bait me. You can lead me with beautiful can't. Women and gifts and things, but you can't force me to do anything because I am a man, rah, kind of thing.
But when that death, my glad refuge, shall I have, bounded the course of my unsteadfast life, and frozen corpse under a marble cold within tomb's bosom, what?
Right, okay.
What happened there?
So you were talking about...
But when that death, my glad refuge, you got that?
Shall have bounded... So when you've got a tomb...
Yeah.
Frozen corpse under a marble cob within... So yes, basically, when I'm in a tomb, it's a very lengthy way of just saying when I'm dead and in a tomb, then. So you've got four lines to say when I'm dead and buried.
When I'm dead and buried, okay. But when that death, my glad refuge, shall have bounded the course of my unsteadfast life, and frozen corpse under a marble cold within tomb's bosom window of my soul, then at his will let him its subject make. Then what he will let Caesar do with me, make me limb after limb be rent. Make me my burial take insides of Thracian wolf.
So, yeah, so basically, he can do what he likes with me when I'm dead.
Dead, yeah,
but not before. And
poor Antony.
Poor Antony. Poor you. Poor me.
Poor Antony. Alas, what was the day? The days of loss that gained thee thy love. Wretch, Antony, Since then Magera pale, with snaky hairs enchained thy misery. The fire thee burnt was never Cupid's fire, for Cupid bears not much as mortal brand. It was some fury's torch, Orestes' torch, which sometimes burnt his mother murdering soul, when wandering mad, rage boiling in his blood, he fled his fault, which followed as he fled, kindled with his bones by shadow pale of mother slain, returned from Stygian lake.
So that's quite a...
There's a lot in there.
There's a lot in there. It's actually amazing that that came across what you were saying, because you haven't been stung by just some paltry Cupid's arrow. This is a cursed, poisoned brand
from the Furies,
and we can. I don't think we need to unpack too much.
No, I've got
the mythology behind that because it's sort of a bit mangled.
Yeah.
But it works actually. I have to say, sometimes you look at long speech like this and you're just going, "Where the fuck?" But actually, this is coming across quite well. You can disagree with me.
No. See, I know this sounds weird, but I can hear it in as I'm, because I've never seen this.
No, I know, and the cruelty of me is handing you things.
For me, this is going well, and I can as I'm saying it, I'm understanding it.
Yeah. Some of the ones we've done.
Some of the ones I'm going, what the fuck?
Yes.
But that's not
to say that it doesn't have its turnarounds some fiddly stuff, but actually it's not. It's not ridiculous, no. It has to be said.
Oh, Anthony. Poor Anthony. Since that day, the old good hap did far from thee retire. The virtue dead, thy glory made alive, so oft by martial deeds is gone in smoke. Since then the bays so well thy forehead knew, to Venus mirthless yielded have their place. Trumpets to pipes, field tents to courtly bowers, lances and pikes to dances and to feasts.
There's a little error there. Venus myrtles yielded have their place. So it's a...
I got mirthless.
Yeah, it's not mirthless. Myrtles... myrtle tree was sacred to Venus, so that's the logic.
Oh, it's a tree.
It's a myrtle tree, so...
To Venus myrtles yielded have their place. Trumpets to pipes, field tents to courtly bowers, lances and pikes to dances and to feasts. Since then, O wretch, instead of bloody wars, thou shouldst have made upon the Parthian kings for Roman honour filled by Crassus' foil. Thou threw'st thy curiants?
Curius.
Curius.
So is that like a...
thou throw'st...
It's a bit of armour, isn't it? And fearful helm, so it's that sort of
thing. Oh, and helm. Oh, it's this bit, isn't it?
Yeah, it's...
Thou threw'st thy curious off and fearful helm, with coward courage unto Egypt's queen in haste to run about her neck to hang, languishing in her arms thy idol maid, in sum given up to Cleopatra's eyes. Oh, thou breakest at length from thence, and once enchanted, breaks from the enchanter that him strongly held. For thy first reason, spoiling of their force the poisoned cups of thy fair sorceress, recurred thy spirit, and then on every side thou madest against the earth with soldiers swarm, all Asia hid, Euphrates banks to tremble, to see at once so many Romans there breathe horror, rage, and with a threatening eye, in mighty squadrons, cross his swelling streams. Naught seen but horse and fiery sparkling arms, naught heard but hideous noise of muttering troops.
So it's that thing of your... going back to past glories. Yeah. You're also talking about how there's that little bit of contempt, you know, she's ruined you a bit, you know, in haste to run about her neck to hang, languishing, you know, it's that
language in
coward courage unto Egypt's queen. It's the usual slanderer that it's all her fault, when of course it's not, it's yours.
You give me all the best parts, don't you?
Yeah, I do, I do. Well, I thought it matched Constabaris quite well. There's a logic to my... I'd like our audience to be able to sort of follow a through line with our players. And you get a death scene, so... even though technically the play doesn't have the death scene, but I manoeuvred it so you get the death scene.
So I'll get it. Okay, cool. The path, the mead, abandoning their... Goods. The path, the mead, abandoning their goods. Hide them for fear in hills of Hyrcani.
Hyrcani. Yeah, so I assume it's just another...
Okay.
Hyrcanus Hide, is a name that rings a bell. I don't know about Hyrcani. That's a footnote thing to look up.
Okay. Hide them for fear in hills of Hyrcani, redoubting thee, then willing to besiege the great freight head of Media. Media?
Yeah, media probably. It's basically what we've hit is this happens every so often in this play is when suddenly they do a list of places and this odds on will get cut, honestly. I don't.
Okay.
I or trimmed. I don't like this kind of thing because it just creates a whole thing, unless there's a map.
Yeah, people going, where
and it's
that?
And where's they're not map? Necessarily where's modern map? Names, no, so no. It's sort of the kind of thing that just creates a barrier.
I mean, Media I've heard of, but
yeah,
Media
is...
the Great Freight Head?
Yeah, it could be Euphrates, effectively, couldn't it? Freight.
Yeah, because Media's in...
Yeah, so the Great Freight Head of
Euphrates. Yeah, so...
I mean, there's a whole question about a lot of the pronunciation there that we need to play around with and make some decisions. So, okay. But,
the great freight head of Media. Thou campest at her walls with vain assault. Thy engines fit, mishap, not thither brought. So long thou stayst, so long thou dost thee rest. So long thy love with such things nourished reframes, reforms itself, and seemingly retakes his force and re-becomes more great. For of thy queen the looks, the grace, the words, sweetness, allurements, amorous delights, entered again thy soul, and day and night, in watch, in sleep, her image followed thee. Not dreaming but of her, repenting still that thou for war had such a goddess left. Thou carest, isn't it, it's supposed to be, I presume. Thou carest no more for path, nor Parthian bow. Sallies, assaults, encounters, shocks, alarms, for ditches, rampiers, wards, entrenched grounds. Thy only care is sight of Nilus streams, sight of that face, whose guileful. That's a weird way to spell it.
Probably is. There are some. There's
try.
This is still a sort of work in progress.
Yeah. No worries. Sight of that face, whose guileful semblance doth wandering in thee infect thy tainted heart. Her absence thee besots, each hour. Each hour of stay to thee impatient seems an age. Oh, enough of conquest. Praise thou deem'st enough, if soon enough the bristle fields thou see of fruitful Egypt and the stranger flood, thy queen's fair eyes, another Pharos lights, thy queen's fair eyes. Another Pharos lights. Return glow, dishonored, despised. In wanton love, a woman thee misleads, sunk in foul sink. Meanwhile, is that together, is there anything? Or mean?
Yeah, that's just one word. It's effectively, yeah. It's just...
Meanwhile, respecting naught. Meanwhile, respecting naught thy wife Octavia and her tender babes, of whom the long contempt against thee whets the sword of Caesar now thy lord becomes. lost thy great empire. All those goodly towns reverence thy name as rebels now thee leave. Rise against thee, and to the ensign's flock of conquering Caesar, who enwalls thee round, caged in thy hold, scarce master of thyself, late master of so many nations. Yet, which is of grief, extremest grief, which is of yet of mischief, highest mischief, it's Cleopatra, alas. Alas, it's she. If she augments the torment of thy pain, betrays thy love, thy life, oh, alas, betrays Caesar to please, whose grace she seeks to gain, with though her crown to save and fortune make.
Oh, should be that thought, I think.
Oh, it is, yep. Up in your pardon, yeah, it is. With thought her crown to save and fortune make, only thy foe, which common ought have been. If her I always loved, and the first flame of her heart-killing love shall burn me last, justly complain if I she disloyal is. Justly complain I she disloyal is, nor constant is, even as I constant am. To comfort my mishap, despising me no more than when the heavens favoured me, despising me no more than when the heavens favoured me. But by nature woman, by nature women wavering are, each moment changing and rechanging minds. Unwise, who blind in them thinks loyalty? Unwise, who blind in them thinks loyalty ever to find in beauty's company?
And it's like we just hit that low self-pity where it's all women's fault at the end. And yes, that's why he's very Constabarus.
It's not my fault.
It's not your fault.
I play Cleopatra?
No, you really, really can't. though, to be fair, Cleopatra is no less, really is, a wall of wailing from both of you, actually. Okay. I mean... It's actually, there's a lot of good stuff in there. Act 3 is when you return, sir.
Act 3.
So after this opening speech, the action shifts to the chorus, read here with me by Alan Scott. This was recorded after the work we do on the next speech, which is technically the beginning of Act 2. So I'm going to start with some discussion of ideas half formed already. So Act 1 opens with Antony doing a massive speech, laying out some stuff, which I haven't gone into yet, so I'm not going to comment too much on, but basically we're in towards the final acts of the story. We then have a chorus, which is the first chorus we'll look at, so in a sense context here doesn't matter too much to this first chorus. Then we have the beginning of Act 2. We'll discuss at length in a moment,
because right.
The act designations, I think, are a bit weird, and I think there are issues with this. I kind of would like to get my hands on the French original and do some, but I believe this is a fairly faithful translation, though I have also heard that it isn't.
Right. Okay.
From two different sources, I've reading through it. So it's fairly faithful, and then it's not. So at the beginning of Act 2, we then have a chap called Philostratus, who does this long speech, and then we have another chorus, and then sort of a scene happens.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of big long speech, big chorus bit, big long speech, big chorus bit. And when you sit down and look at the play as a text, you sort of go, when's something going to happen? However, I think this is wholly unfair to the play itself, which we are now going to explore, but I'm not going to give you any more hints than that. So you are a chorus of Egyptians...
Yeah.
Who remain on stage throughout the first three acts.
Anyway, so that's where we are. So Mark Antony does a massive speech, presumably complaining about his loss and he's doomed and it's all Cleopatra's fault, alas, 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 kind of stuff. I haven't looked into it. I'm looking into that speech either tomorrow or the day after, so I'll have a much better composite whole. But we then go into this chorus, which we will stop and start on a little bit. Let's take it. It's very regular. I don't know how the French would have performed it originally, or for that matter, how Mary Sidney may have considered its performance, even though it probably was never.
The boiling tempest still makes not sea waters foam, nor still the northern blast disquiets quiet streams. Nor who his Chester fills sails to the morning beams, on waves wind tosses fast, still keeps his ship from home. Nor Jove still down doth cast, inflamed with bloody ire, on man, on tree, on hill, his darts of thundering fire. Nor still the heat doth last, on face of parched plain, nor wrinkled cold doth still, on frozen furrows rain. But still, as long as we in this low world remain, mishaps our daily mates, our lives to entertain, and woes which wear no dates still perch upon our heads. None go, but straight will be some greater in their steads. Nature made us not free when first she made us live, when we began to be began our woe, which growing evermore, as dying life doth grow, do more and more us grieve, and tire us more and more. No stay in fading states, for more to height they wretch, their fellow miseries, the more to height to stretch. They cling even to the crown, and threatening furious wise, from tyrannizing pates, do often pull it down.
Pause there before you turn the page. So, I kind of wanted to let that flow, because it's more themic than, it's not plot, per se.
No.
It refers to the plot, but it's very much about life is terrible. Mm. We humans bear it.
Life's a beach and then you fry.
Exactly. And the, you know, so it and all this weather imagery that's going with it is sort of the ebbs and tides. And, you know, it's that thing, do you survive the sea? And I don't think that's it, though I think it may be vaguely connected to Actium. I think it's more thematic than that. I don't think it's about the faring on the sea as our armies did. I think it's more humanity as a... our people.
Yeah.
It's all very thematic. It doesn't feel like it's telling us anything apart from life's a bit shit. So it's like this way, and it feels more like the multiple voices than the last. Remember the last, when we looked at Tragedy of Mariam, it felt like individual speakers and then maybe chorus joining in. This feels much more flowy, like it could be passed from baton to baton.
Yeah, you could almost do it with... It would actually work quite well as a two-hander, wouldn't it?
Yeah, or a series of two-handers.
Alternating stanzas.
Yeah, that kind of thing, because it feels much more about a group talking about something. It does actually feel like a mass.
Yeah, I mean the whole of this first chorus one is, let's have a good romp round... morality and Greek philosophy, Greek mythology.
Mm. Yes, there's a lot of that going on. Okay, let's look at the second page. Half.
Right.
I like to reach your wretch. They wretch. The word that was striving for is reach. But it needs to write.
That's why I left it as wretch.
Yeah, I suspect it would have been reach and streech as a pronunciation thing, but I don't know.
It makes sense either direction. Mm. I think you're probably right that reach and then deform the second word to make the rhyme.
But we're always going to slightly lose.
Yeah.
Second page.
In vain on waves untried, to shun them go we should, to scythes and massagetes, who near the pole reside. In vain to boiling sands, which Phoebus' battery beats, for with us still they would cut seas and compass lands. The darkness no more sure to join with heavy night, the light which gilds the days to follow Titan pure, no more the shadow light the body to ensue, then wretchedness always us wretches to pursue. O blessed who never breathed, or whom with pity moved, death from his cradle reaved, and swaddled in his grave, and blessed also he, as curse may blessing have, who low and living free, no prince's charge hath proved. By stealing sacred fire, Prometheus then unwise, provoking gods to ire, the heap of ills did stir, and sickness pale and cold, our end which onward spur, to plague our hands too bold, to filch the wealth of skies. In heaven's hate since then, of ill with ill enchained, we race of mortal men, full fraught our breasts have borne, a thousand, thousand woes, our heavenly souls now thorn, which free from before from those, no earthly passion pained. War and war's bitter cheer, now long time with a stay, and fear of hated foe, still in Cretus sore, our harms worse daily grow, less yesterday they were, than now, and will be more tomorrow than today.
Okay, my little theory, I don't even know if it hasn't already been noted by somebody else, seems to work. So,
it's just
increasing on the dooms, isn't it?
Oh yeah, I'm doomed.
There's a touch of the dooms here, isn't
yes.
there? So it's painting this picture in an emotional sense. You know, I feel that this builds in, you know, that there's actions and this is, it feels choric in a way.
Yeah, I think actually doing it as a double act would probably work quite nicely.
I see this as a mass.
Yeah.
But the text can be done doubly and still be kept clear. Mm. I think if you have more voices than two, then it almost inevitably becomes too distorted.
I was thinking you could almost do it as call and response.
Mm. Okay, now we're not going to go back over that because I don't think there's really anything textually to dig out.
No,
I think it's about a wall of a theme of emotion. I think it's actually quite physical, or potentially quite physical. Now, what happens immediately after this? Because, as I say, this is a chorus sandwich. And the moment they finish their general lamenting, someone stands out of the crowd. This is what I think is what's supposed to happen. And goes, "What horrible fury, what cruel rage, O Egypt, so extremely thee torments." And he's talking to the crowd, who happily have just been on stage lamenting for the past 5 minutes.
Right, so...
So this chorus isn't, we are here talking about commenting on the play. They're in the play, and then someone steps out, and he basically does The End of the World is Nigh, because he says to the chorus, citizens of Alexandria, the Romans are coming, pray, because we're all fucked.
Yes.
And that's what then follows.
Right.
The chorus we've just done. And then after that is the next chorus. And I'm thinking that this is not a chorus, a scene, a chorus. This is
one sequence.
Scene.
So effectively what you've got almost is you've got Act 1, which is the setup that you talked about. You've then got this chorus followed by the Philostratus. Mm. Followed by this.
And there
which is effectively Act 2.
No. I think this is all Act 1. The thing is, the rest of Act 2 is quite long. It's a long scene with Cleopatra and then it ends in a chorus.
Right.
I think the deception is that the end of the first chorus, that's where Act 2 begins. I think that the two choruses with Philostratus in a sandwich, that is an action.
Right.
That ends Act One. That's right, now my thought.
Follow the logic of that, yeah.
Otherwise, we end up with six acts.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting one, of course, is despite the fact that this is a chorus of Egyptians,
yes,
every reference is to Greek mythology.
Yes.
So, technically, we're now at the close of Act One, but we're going to plough on. So, this is Philostratus with Rob Meissen from the opening of Act Two. This was one of the first sessions we did, and I'm very down on the play, listening back, because that's what happens when you just read it. I think Tragedy of Antony does not give up its secrets by reading it at all. And you should just be able to hear my brain ticking over as the dramaturgy kicks in. Listen carefully.
So the first act is Mark Antony doing a long speech about stuff. Then there's a chorus speech. Then there's this long speech. Then there's another chorus speech. And then you could say the play starts.
Ah, by so, which time most of the audience have gone home.
By which time most of the audience has gone home. So I'm suspecting that when it comes to the edit version, the first half an hour, it's not a long play, it's about 90 minutes, I think, if you run it at pace. I think it will probably end up being 70, because I'll probably cut
quite bits.
I will fill it a lot of this. And this might go entirely. I mean, this will probably record it properly, but to some degree, this is probably as good as it gets. This is partly for me to correct your... I have lightly modernised the spelling, but I haven't done a vast amount. So let's sort of talk our way through it. If you'll just read a little while and I'll see if there's any obvious massive errors.
What horrible fury, what cruel rage. O Egypt, so extremely thee torments. Hast thou the gods so angered by thy fault? Hast thou against them some such crime conceived that their ingrained hand lift up in threats that should desire and...
You've never seen
there's
it before.
Lots of that's this.
Yes, it's... I'm not even going to ask you if you know what you're saying yet.
I know, well, obviously Egypt has done something wrong.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I think, yes. Yes.
Well, I think that's basically what we're saying in the first 55 lines. Egypt, you've been naughty.
Yeah. All bad things are going to happen. Yes, definitely. Hast thou against them
some such crime conceived that their ingrained hand lift up in threats? They should desire by that. Sorry, I just can't see where the emphasis is there.
I can't see it either. So.
Hast thou against them such crimes conceived that their ingrained hand lift up in threat? They should desire in thy heart blood to bathe? Yeah, I suppose it makes vague sense. Almost almost a comma after threats, doesn't it?
Yes, in my edition there is a comma. But even that But then the question mark might not be a stopping point.
No.
Because question marks often aren't.
No.
So, because they can be questions in the middle of a sentence.
Yeah.
Which is a habit which we dropped, I think, in the early...
Hast thou against them some such crime conceived that their ingrained hand lift up in threat? They should desire in thy heart blood to bathe? And that their burning wrath, which naught can quench, should pitiless on us still lighten down. And their burning wrath, which naught can quench, which is understandable.
Anyway, let's move forward in our confusion.
Yeah.
And see if that adds more...
Confusion.
Well, less confusion would be nice. I quite like that. Flash. So lighten is like lightning.
Yes.
Yeah, still lightened down. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are not hewn, I think so.
Yeah. We are not hewn out of the monstrous mass of giants, those which heaven rack conspired, Ixium's race, false praters of his loves. Ixium's race, false praters of his loves.
So Ixium, king of...
Well, I think after you've said king... Is as far as we need to know.
Well, it's
don't know what the relation is.
It may have a thematic connection with someone like Cleopatra or Antony.
Yeah, Antony which we don't know.
Antony betrays his wife by, so there's a sort of thing going on there.
We are not hewn out of the monstrous mass of giants, those which heaven's wrath conspired, Ixion's race, false praetor of his love, nor yet of him who feigned lightnings found, nor cruel Tantalus, nor bloody Atreus?
I go with Atreus myself, but I'm willing to shift the vowels now.
Nor cruel Tantalus, nor bloody Atreus, whose cursed banquet for
Thyestes?
Thyestes. Whose curses banquet for Thyestes' plague, may the beholding sun for horror turn his back and backward from his course return.
Oh. And yes, the thought carries on for another four
lines.
Yeah,
I was going to say, he is,
so
isn't he?
So it's very much ploughing on into that bit of Greek.
Yeah, and hastening
tragedy.
His wing-footed horse's race, plunge him in sea for shame to hide his face, whilst
Sullen,
oh yeah. While sullen night upon the wondering world for midday light her starry mantle cast.
Yeah, so it's a bit florid, but broadly
just a bit,
speaking.
Yes, he's a bit pissed off.
We are not hewn out of the monstrous mass of giants. We're not all of the people
in
the speech. That's all you're saying, I think.
Yeah, it is.
It's to say we're not like the titans of old. Of Greek mythology.
But what we be, whatever wickedness be us, by us is done, alas, with that more plagues, more eager torment, could the gods declare to heaven and earth that us they hateful hold? Is it us?
Jessica
got a V in there, VS, that's all.
I failed with that. Do that one again, because that's quite nice. This is feeling like it has some sense to it. So.
Yeah, I don't know, that's what I sort of just went through it, trying to get it in my own mind. Because he's obviously said, you know, we're not hewn out of the gods, but what we be, whatever wickedness by us is done, alas, with what more plagues, more eager torment, could the gods declare to heaven and earth that us they hateful hold? With soldiers, strangers, horrible in arms, our land is hid, our people drowned in tears, but terror here and horror naught is seen, and present death prizing our life each hour. Hard at our ports and at our porches waits our conquering foe. Hearts fail us, hopes are dead. Our queen laments. Ah, he's Egyptian.
Yeah, so he is Egyptian.
Our queen laments. Yeah, so obviously, at the very start, he's saying, oh shit, what have we done? Isn't it?
What's coming?
Oh God, we've put a foot in it here.
So, and that's very personified, our queen laments.
That does slightly change
my thinking of the doubling, so you might in the end not be doing this speech, but that's fine. That's fine. It's all grist to the mill, someone else can interpret it. Using you as a base mark.
Oh,
you're
lucky
the
them. Our queen laments, and this great emperor sometime would, now they did, whom worlds did fear, abandoned, betrayed, now minds no more but from his evils by hastened death do pass. Come, you poor people, tired with ceaseless plaints, with tears and sighs, make mournful sacrifice on Isis altars, not ourselves to save, but soften Caesar. Yeah, makes sense, yeah.
Mm.
Not ourselves to save, but soften Caesar, and him piteous make to us his prey. So his lenity may change our death into captivity.
So it's, and this is very public. Actually, in my mind, when I read through this the other day, it felt quite private. It was like,
that's just what I was starting to think.
This feels like it's
a rating.
Shouting the madman in the street. People prayed, you know, that he'll be nice. If we say this, maybe he won't kill us.
Who just make slaves of us?
Well, that's the thing.
It's that
a Roman. Give us that speech again from "Come, you poor people, tired." So make it more of a demonstrative thing.
Come, you poor people, tired with ceaseless plaints, with tears and sighs, make mournful sacrifice on Isis altars, not ourselves to save, but soften Caesar and him piteous make to us his prey. That so his lenity may change our death into captivity.
to us his prey, that so his lenity may change
that
our
so
death
his lenity
captivity.
May change our death
it's almost
into
a
captivity.
Beat after prey, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah. Strange are the evils the fates on us have brought, but oh, alas, how far more strange the cause, love. Love, alas, whoever would have thought hath lost this realm inflamed with his fire. Funny line.
Oh, no, I really like this. This speech is growing on me. I hated it. It's growing on me. So he's talking about the irony of what is bringing about the death of their civilization.
Yeah.
And it's love. All you need is love. La 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 la.
Yeah. Hath this realm inflamed with his fire. Yeah.
It's the irony he's talking about, and you know, and there's almost despair in that. You're going to move into a list in a bit. when you do, just sort of don't hang on to it too much.
Oh,
it's
yeah. Men on
the catastrophe of Troy.
Dave Phobos.
Yeah, Dave Phobos.
Glaucus. Thousands more. Oh God! Thank God we're not doing the thousands more then.
Yeah, some plays you would. And again,
how much filling they required.
I'm actually just looking at micro trims for this, actually. Now, you know, some of that repetition can go. But actually, the thesis of this, and if we make it that he's outdoors, there's street noises, there's jeering crowds or lamentation or something, it suddenly feels alive.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was trying to do this by myself,
it was sort of an inward thing.
I didn't know what the hell was going on. I didn't have a clue, which is why we do this, which is good.
You can see this as a speech out to
a crowd.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it has some flow. I've done the thing that I normally never do, which is started from a negative viewpoint of the text. So let's go from love again. Mm-hmm.
Oh, but alas, how far more strange the cause. Love. Love, alas, whoever would have thought hath lost this realm inflamed with his fire. Love, playing love, which men say kindles not but in soft hearts, ashes made our towns.
Have you got an hath there? Hath ashes?
No.
You haven't got a hath. In my edition there's a hath there. But in soft hearts hath ashes made our towns.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, because there's a comma after hearts in here, which probably isn't required.
It's still in mine.
Love playing love. Yeah, it is. Which men say kindles not, but in soft hearts hath ashes made our towns. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And his sweet shafts with whose shot none are killed. Sorry, what's that next word?
Ulcer.
Oh, is ulcer. You've got a V in there again.
There's a little footnote, so there might be. Old notes just ulcerate, so a blistering wound from
with sweet shafts, with whose shot none are killed, which ulcer not, with death our lands have filled.
We go into an example of death and destruction.
Such was the bloody, murdering, hellish love possessed thy heart, fair, false.
So this is the example.
Yeah.
Priam's son is the example, and you need to land on Priam's son.
Fair, false guest.
Priam's son is the fair, false guest. He goes to somebody else's place, nicks Helen of Troy, and comes back again.
Such for the bloody, murdering, hellish love possessed thy heart, fair, false guest, Priam's son, firing a brand which after made to burn the Trojan towers by Gracian's ruinate. By this love, Priam, Hector, Troilus, Memnon, Diphobus, Glaucus, thousands more who I wish to name, whom red Scamander's armour clogs streams rolled into seas before their dates are dead. So plague he, so many tempests raiseth, so murdering he, so many cities raiseth, when insolent, blind, lawless, orderless, with mad delight our sense he entertains.
But that sentence was fine, as long as you rattle through the names quite quickly.
Yeah. Diphobus is a.
Diphobus.
Oh, I think it should be.
Diphobus,
I think.
It's Diphobus.
Yeah. Who's gonna notice?
Who's gonna know? Diphobus. I mean, people. Most people will probably get Prime Hector Troilus. They will not get the other
Memnon,
three.
Glaucus. Yeah. No. Their names I've never heard of.
Memnon rings a bell, but the other two don't immediately.
Don't mean anything to me, those three names.
I've never been a fan of Troy. Anyway, we've only got a few stanzas left to go.
All-knowing gods, our rack did thus foretell by signs in earth, by signs in starry spheres. By signs in starry spheres which should have moved us, had not destiny with too strong hand warped our misery. The comets flaming through the scattered clouds with fiery beams most like unbraided hairs. The fearful dragon whistling at the banks, and holy Apis ceaseless bellowing as never erst. And holy Apis ceaseless bellowing as never erst, and shedding endless tears. Blood raining down from heaven in unknown showers. He's very much the prophet of doom, isn't he?
You can see him. I think he needs a big sign saying the end of the world is nigh.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, he's right. I mean, it's basically, there is a problem.
Yeah. Yes, you
I'm not
suggesting don't see
a particularly
it.
Helpful solution, which is basically just pray en masse.
Yes. Yeah, it's very much
it's
like
very
that, isn't
doomy,
it?
Very doomy, isn't it? Blood raining.
Blood
down
raining
from
down from heaven. In a, he's that's yeah, cause game, he starts to warm to it now, isn't he?
Yeah.
You know, he's started off by, you know, by being a little bit gentle, but he's really getting into it now.
Well, I think it ebbs and flows. I think it starts quite extreme. Oh, Egypt.
He's trying to get attention there, isn't he?
Yeah, and then he goes into a little obscurity one when he's sort of vaguely got them, and then I think it then builds up its pace again.
Yeah.
I think that's how it starts. But this feels quite fast. I could be wrong. Anyway, very little left.
Blood raining down from heavens in unknown showers. Our God's dark faces overcast with woe, and dead men's ghosts appearing in the night. Yea, even this night, while all the city stood oppressed with terror, horror, servile, feel deep silence over all. The sounds were heard of divers songs and diverse instruments within the void of air. And howling noise. Ooh.
Yeah, actually, I'm entirely wrong. You don't pick up the pace. You pull it back.
Yeah.
It's like you've gone into the invective at the beginning of this.
He's starting to enjoy this, isn't he?
Pull everything back and it's deep, sonorous thing. And you're building
diverse within the void of the howling noise such as made Bacchus priests in Bacchus feasts. Yeah, he's using alliteration
mad,
as well.
Actually, I deliberately didn't change that. It's mad rather than
mad.
Yeah, no, you've got extra letters there.
And as mad Bacchus priests in Bacchus feasts on Nyssa, mate. Who the hell's Nyssa? Apartment shop.
Where Bacchus was raised. I thought it was something associated with. It presumably
I assumed it was a person.
Where the priests would gather.
Yeah, I assumed it was a person. Mm.
Is it Nyssa or Nyssa? I don't know. I genuinely don't know.
No.
I'm not going to make a decision.
Only trouble is if you say Nyssa, that might come across as N-I-C-E-R.
I've been looking at quite a few times and actually just going, do you slightly strangify a word? Because the modern connotation is comic.
Realise that Nyssa means...
I think now that we know how to do it, I think we've got a chance in hell of making it clear. I didn't think we had a chance before we started doing this as an exercise.
It's actually an oration.
Yeah,
I think it's an oration.
Yeah,
because I thought to start, but I thought
this is about the reactions from the crowd.
Yes,
this is a crowd scene.
Yes, it is,
and that's important.
It's a sort of speaker's corner.
Yeah. Anyway,
such as made Bacchus priest as Bacchus feast on Nyssa make, and such as mad Bacchus priest in Bacchus feast on Nyssa make, and seemed the company our city lost went to the enemy. So we, forsaken both of gods and men, so are we in the mercy of our foes, and we henceforth obedient must become to laws of them who have us overcome. Ooh, doom and gloom.
Bow the knee.
We're doomed. You're all doomed.
Yes, it's a bit, that thing. You know now that you've got to be subservient. You are no longer a world power.
No.
You have to bow the knee.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm...
I think it is.
I'm much happier with that than I thought I would be.
Yeah.
I think that makes... So that goes to show how easy it is for... a reader to completely miss the fucking point of a scene, which is lovely. This is lovely. I love demonstrating to the world how rubbish I am. Don't worry, you're not alone.
No, join the company.
Okay, I'm just going to pause that.
And now, back to the chorus. It's a chorus sandwich with Alan Scott reading the chorus.
Okay, I'm going to give you four lines in to start this second chorus.
Okay.
As a little hint of where we've just come from. So this is, you know, this is the woe to everyone, we're all going to die. So we forsaken both of gods and men, so are we in the mercy of our foes. And we henceforth obedient must become to laws of them who have us overcome.
Lament we our mishaps, drown we with tears our woe, for lamentable haps, lamented easy grow, and much less torment bring than when they first did spring. We want that woeful song, wherewith would music's queen doth ease her woes among fresh springtime's bushes green, on pleasant branch alone, a renewing ancient moan. We want that moanful sound that prattling pruner meets on fields of Thracian ground or streams of Thracian lakes to empt her breast of pain for it's by her slain. Though halcyons do still bewailing Saic's lot, the seas with plainings fill which his death limbs have got, not ever other grave than tomb of wombs to have. And though the bird in death that most meander loves, so sweetly sighs his breath when death his fury proves, as almost softs his heart and almost blunts his dart. As all the plaints of those, nor all their tearful alarms, cannot content our woes, nor serve to wail the harms in soul which we, poor we, do feel enforced do be. Nor they of Phoebus bred in tears can do so well, they for their brother shed, who into Padus fell, rash guide of chariot clear, surveyor of the year. Nor she whom heavenly powers to weeping rock did turn, whose tears distil in showers, and show she yet doth mourn, wherewith his top to skies Mount Sisyphus doth rise. Nor weeping drops which flow from bark of wounded tree, that mirror's shame doth show, with ours compared may be, to quench her loving fire, who durst embrace her sire. Nor all the howlings made on Cybele's sacred hill, by eunuchs of a trade, who Attis still, with doubles cries resound, which echo make rebound. Our plaints no limits stay, nor more than do our woes, both infinitely stray, and neither measure knows. In measure let them plain, who measured griefs sustain.
It's no more contenty
no.
than the previous one. It's just more lamentations with classical examples, most of which are really obscure. I got very, very few of those.
I think we probably both.
And I think even then, I think some of those were pretty obscure.
Yeah, I think the thing is that both of us suffer from the fact that we have not had the type of classical education that would have been...
We've got a bit of a classical education.
Yeah, but nowhere near as...
Yeah, but I think there's a reasonable repertoire of certain classical figures who you expect to know, even then. And some of this just seems willfully obscure.
Yeah. It's showy-offy.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this as a sequence. As a maker of theatre, I can, you know, with some cuts, I wouldn't keep all of this, but you could create a really nice sequence out of those two choruses and Philostrata's break in the middle as a way of breaking the action up. I think that is really quite clever. And then we go into a scene with Cleopatra, which is very sceney with Cleopatra and her handmaidens, which...
It's, the other thing I found interesting with this is that the first chorus is an eight-line stanza, and the second one is a six-line stanza.
Yes, they're...
It's...
They are quite different.
Interesting change of style in some ways. And I don't quite understand... the logic.
No, but then
and, that, and that's before we get into the next chorus, which is even
totally
stranger.
Totally different again, and which is twice as long, by the looks of it. So it's almost like they wrote actually one big chorus lament and then decided you needed to break it up with the chap speaking in the middle, and then the verse structure just went weird or something. So... But again, that could be down to the translation, because translating French verse forms is not always easy to do. Yes. So, I think we've got the measure of it. I don't think there's anything really to... I mean, we could dig into the classical references, but that sort of feels like something to do later with some books.
Yeah,
I don't feel that there's... that needing to know the precise details matters at this stage.
And finally, and this is a bit of a mess of... a test of the ideas articulated above. So this is a rushed read-through of the whole chorus sequence from Chorus 1 into Philostratus into Chorus 2. With Mark Scanlon being a sport here, it was to give us an idea of what to do with this sequence of action and what not to do. It is a wall of words that goes on for a good 10 minutes. And it tests to some degree the idea that we had about how the play is arranged. So it may contradict everything I've just said. I won't have a more formed opinion until we're done, basically. So, thoughts on a postcard, if you like what you're hearing or if you disagree entirely, there's still time to change it. More on that anon. Here's Mark Scanlon doing the Chorus Philostratus sandwich. Enjoy. Let us go to almost the beginning of the play. Philostratus. So that's Act... Well, it might not even be down as Act 2. Let me just find the page. It'll be easier. It's quite close to the beginning. In fact, what I might be is really, really mean and make you do... a lot of text. Yeah. Okay. I'm going to be mean to you because I kind of want to do this. So, there's a chorus. Mm-hmm. This is lots of people's voices. Then someone steps out from the chorus to make more comprehensible sense. And then they step back into the chorus and then the rest of the group say all of that. The way this flows, when it's chorus, it's more thematic. That is an actual exhortation to the people to despair. Basically, the Roman army are surrounding Alexandria. So that you're surrounded. The idea is that you are one of the chorus here, and this will get cut down. And then you would step out from the general lamentations to make a speaker's corner kind of speech. So that's Philostratus is speaker's corner. And then we would go back into the general woe is me, woe is me. And I'd just like you to just have a crack at reading through the whole thing and just see how it flows and see. So the chorus is general despair, but then I want real sort of fury and mad prophet kind of stuff for Philostratus. Mm-hmm. Have a crack.
Okay.
I mean, he had no idea he was doing this when he came in. He thought it was going to be a horse. And I got to be the horse. It's terrible. Terrible.
I was Banks. The boiling tempest still makes not sea waters foam, nor still the northern blast disquiets quiet streams, nor who his chest to fill sails to the morning beams.
on waves wind tosseth fast, still keeps his ship from home, nor Jove still down doth cast, inflamed with bloody ire, on man, on tree, on hill, his darts of thundering fire, nor still the heat doth last, on face of parched plain, nor wrinkled cold doth still on frozen furrows reign. But still as long we in this low world remain, mishaps our daily mates our lives do entertain, and woes which bear no date still perch upon our heads, none go, but straight will be some greater in their steads. Nature made us not free, when first she made us live, when we began to be began our woe, which growing evermore, as dying life doth grow, do more and more us grieve, and tire us more and more. No stay in fading states, for more to height they reach, their fellow miseries, the more to height do stretch. They cling even to the crown, and threatening furious wise, from tyrannizing pates, do often pull it down. In vain on waves untried, to shun them go we should, to sighs and massagates, who near the pole reside, in vain to boiling sands, which Phoebus' battery beats, for with us still they would cut seas and compass lands. The darkness no more sure, to join with heavy night, the light which gilds the days, to follow tight and pure, no more the shadow light, the body to ensue, then wretchedness always, us wretches to pursue. O blessed who never breathed, or whom with pity moved, death from his cradle reaved, and swaddled in his grave. And blessed also be, as cursed may blessing have, who low and living free, no prince's charge hath proved, by stilling sacred fire, Prometheus then unwise, provoking gods to ire, the heap of ills did stir, and sickness pale and cold, our end which onward spur, to plague our hands too bold, to filch the wealth of skies. In heaven's hate since then, of ill with ill enchained, we race of mortal men, full fraught our best have borne, and thousand woes, our heavenly souls now thorn, which freeve before them those, no earthly passion pained. War and war's bitter cheer, now long time with us stay, and fear of hated foe still increaseth sore. Our harms worse daily grow, less yesterday they were than now, and will be more tomorrow than today.
And now think of yourself as a different person, someone full of fury, stepping out of the crowd. Give it what for?
What horrible fury, that cruel rage, O Egypt so extremely thee torments! Hast thou the gods so angered by thy fault? Hast thou against them some such crime conceived, that their ingrained hand lift up in threats, they should desire in thy heart blood to bathe, and that their burning wrath, which naught can quench, should pitiless honour still lighten down? We are not hewn out of this monstrous mass of giants, those which heaven's wrack conspired, Ixion's race, false praetor of his loves, nor yet of him who feigned lightnings found, nor cruel Tantalus, nor bloody Atreus, whose cursed banquet for Thyestus' plague made the beholding sun for horror turn his back, and backward from his curse course return, and hastening his wing-footed horse's race, plunge him in sea for shame to hide his face, while sullen night upon the wandering world for midday's light her starry mantle cast. But what we be, whatever wickedness by us is done, alas! With what more plagues, more eager torments could the gods declare to heaven and earth that, as they hateful hold, with soldiers, strangers, horrible in arms, our land is hid, our people drowned in tears. But terror here and horror, naught is seen, and present death prizing our life each hour. Hard at our ports and at our porches waits our conquering foe, hearts fail us, hopes are dead. Our queen laments, and this great emperor, sometime, would now they did, whom worlds did fear, abandoned, betrayed, now minds no more, but from his evils by hastened death to pass. Come, you poor people, tired with ceaseless plaints, with tears and sighs make mournful sacrifice, on Isis' altars, not ourselves to save, but soften Caesar, and him piteous make, to us his prey, that so his lenity may change our death into captivity. Strange are the evils the fates on us have brought, but, oh, but alas, how far more strange the cause. Love, love, alas, whoever would have thought, hath lost this realm inflamed with his fire. Love, playing love, which men say kindles not, but in soft hearts ashes made our towns, and his sweet shafts, with those shot none are killed, which ulcer not, with deaths our lands have filled. Such was the bloody, murdering, hellish love, possessed thy heart, fair false, guest Priam's son, firing a brand which after made to burn the Trojan towers by Gracians ruinate. By this love, Priam, Hector, Troilus, Memnon, Deiphobus, Glaucus, thousands mo, whom red Shamander's armour clogged streams, rolled into seas before their dates are dead. So plague he, so many tempests raiseth, so murdering he, so many cities raiseth, when insolent, blind, lawless, orderless, with mad delight our sense he entertains. All-knowing gods our racks did us foretell, by signs in earth, by signs in starry spheres, which should have moved us, had not destiny with too strong hand warped our misery. The comets flaming through the scattered clouds, with fiery beams most like unbroided hares, the fearful dragon whistling at the banks, and holy Apis ceaseless bellowing, as never erst, and shedding endless tears. Blood raining down from heaven in unknown showers, our gods' dark faces overcast with woe, and dead men's ghosts appearing in the night. Yea, even this night, while all the city stood, oppressed with terror, horror, servile fear, deep silence over all, the sounds were heard of divers songs and diverse instruments, within the void of air and howling noise, such as mad Bacchus priests in Bacchus feasts on Nyssa make, and seemed the company, our city lost, went to the enemy. So we forsaken both of gods and men, so are we in the mercy of our foes, and we henceforth obedient must become to laws of them who have us overcome.
And then it goes back into being chorus, and let's try this in together at the same time. Let's see how that sounds.
Okay.
Lament we our mishaps, drown we with tears our woe, for lamentable haps, lamented easy grow, and much less torment bring than when they first did spring. We want that woeful song, wherewith would music's queen doth ease our woes among fresh springtime bushes green, on pleasant branch alone, renewing ancient moan. We want that moanful sound that prattling proscene makes on fields of Thracian ground, or streams of Thracian lakes, to empt her breast of pain for Itys by her slain. Though Halcyons do still, bewailing Selic's lot, the sea with plainings fill, which his dead limbs have got, not ever other grave than tomb of waves to have. And though the bird in death that most meander loves, so sweetly sighs his breath, when death his fury proves, as almost soft his heart, and almost blunts his dart. Yet all though plaints of those, nor all though tearful larums, cannot content our woes, nor serve to wail the harms in soul which we poor we to feel enforced be, nor they of Phoebe's bread in tears can do so well, they for their brother shed, who into Padus fell, rash guide of the chariot clear, surveyor of the year, nor she whom heavenly powers to weeping rock did turn, whose tears distill in showers, and show ye she yet doth mourn, wherewith his top to skies Mount Sipylus doth rise, nor weeping drops which flow from bark of wounded tree, that mirror's shame doth show with ours compared may be, to quench her loving fire
who durst embrace her sire.
Nor all the howlings made on Sibyl's sacred hill by eunuchs of her trade, who Attis still with doubled cries resound, which echo makes rebound. Our plaints no limit stay, no more than do our woes more infinitely stray, and neither measure knows. In measure let them plain who measured grief sustain.
Okay. That was about 10 minutes of never-ending dirge. Now, I think, and the problem is when you've got two people who don't really know the text very well trying to stumble together, it does sound incredibly flat. I think there is something that can be... I think I will try and record people in pairs to do that, but what will happen with the chorus, all the choruses... and to some degree, Philostratus, is I will actually make some cuts before we record it.
Mm-hmm.
I've got recordings of you working through it. I've got somebody else who, lucky him, had a go at... I think Alan did the choruses. Somebody else did Philostratus as a rough take before. So I've got enough versions I can now sit and listen to and go, right, what do I zoom in on? Because some of it is stupidly over-listy. You know, the Trojan, you've got Priam, Hector, Troilus, Memnon, Deiphobus, Glaucus, thousands more. Thankfully, it doesn't go into any more, but you've got all of that. And it's like we just want to try and get into the meat. So, you know, we've done these rough read-throughs. So if someone wants to get a sense of what the full text sounds like, they've sort of got it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not perfect, but life's too short. So I kind of want to get the two choruses and this, and I want to make it, I might have it that some of this chorus continues underneath Philostratus, yep, going, and you know, we'd work on making that work. I wanted to do that as one chunk because I've only done it in individual sequences. I want to get a sense of what it sounds like, you know, even with stumbles and errors, how it all sounds together. And of course I will be able to send you these recordings so you can listen back to you and the others. And if that's useful to you, then you, when we come to record, you've got that in the bag, as it were. And that's basically... Any thoughts about Philostratus or the chorus or how it sounded? I mean, did you get any of it, or what did you take away from it?
Yes, I mean, I can see that difference between doing Philostratus as the more of the soapbox high.
Yeah,
sort of side park corner, sort of soapboxy type of a delivery. Yeah,
yeah.
And more, it's more.
Well, he's a person. He's a person, as opposed to the chorus isn't.
No, that's right. And it's more fire and brimstoney sort of speech, isn't it? Text.
Yeah, and the lines are sort of following on from each other, and there's sort of breaks in lines and the places you can pause. Whereas the chorus is, it's going to be trying to make it not get stuck in that rhythm because the chorus doesn't really do anything dynamic.
No.
So it's not a cheerful message. There's no hope
to
anything you do. I mean, it really is the end of the world is nigh. Style stuff. So you can go.